Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Women Arsecast February Mailbag Edition. We realise we haven't done a Mailbag Edition in quite some time, and it's fair to say quite a lot has happened, even in the last few weeks, let alone since November, the last time we did one. So I put a call out for your questions on Twitter and on the Arseblog Discord, and we had loads and loads and loads, and we could have done, I think we could have gone into the Guinness Book of World Records for length of a podcast if we'd taken all of them. Quite a lot of themes kind of coming up, but, you know, just in the last couple of weeks, we've had the Champions League draw where Arsenal will play Bayern Munich in the quarterfinals. The transfer window, obviously, where three players came in, Gio returning from loan, Jordan Nobbs and Mane Awabuchi leaving, the abortive search for a striker in January, and we've got loads of questions about that, as you can imagine. Arsenal qualified for the Conti Cup final, where they'll play Chelsea, because why not? We always play Chelsea, and two games coming up against Chelsea, that will be great fun, I'm sure. And unfortunately, we've dropped points in each of our last three WSL games, and with the absences of Beth Mead and Vivian Miedema, I think particularly biting at the moment. And again, we've got loads of questions about that, as I'm sure you can imagine. And here to chew the fat with me over those two things are Pippa from her sick bed. How are you doing, Pippa?
Ah, oh, I've been better, but yeah, I'm good, thank you.
Thanks very much for joining us amongst the kind of the cough medicine, the tissues and everything like that. So we might use Pippa sparingly during this podcast just to spare her voice, but applaud her commitment. And we've also got Alex Ibaceta with us as well. Alex, how are you doing?
Probably better than Pippa, I would have to say.
Fair enough. Let's crack on with the questions, and we're going to start with questions from the Arseblog Discord server, which you get access to if you are a member of Arseblog on Patreon. And the first one I'm going to ask, and I'm going to put it to you, Alex, is from Alonby, who asks, and this is more of a general question to kick off, because we've got loads of questions that are very specific to Arsenal and transfers, etc., etc. But a general one: the WSL season seems too short to me. On the other hand, there are so many injuries in the women's game. I'm also not sure there's enough money for additional teams. Do you think we should increase the number of league matches? And if so, how?
It's such a hard question, because obviously WSL is quite a small league. When you look at the overvasting general football leagues, I mean, when you compare it to the Premier League, it's a joke. But even when you compare it to other women's leagues, for example, Spanish league has just a bit more, and they play 30 games a season. So it's like, it's that little difference, but it just depends what you want from it, or it depends, I think more importantly, it depends how the federation is gonna schedule everything together, because there's no point of having more teams, more games to be able to grow the league if the FA is not going to be able to schedule that accordingly around external competitions, whether it be Champions League, FA Cup, Conti Cup. So there's not really much of a point of talking about it now until the FA get kind of their stuff sorted out in terms of scheduling. Because essentially that's where all the injuries are going to come from. It's going to come from inconsistent times, no rest days, inconsistent in the sense of there is no routine for any of the players. Midweek game is going to pop up, you're going to play a Sunday again. And yes, they're professional. You have that argument as well, but they're still humans and their body needs a certain amount of time to recuperate. And if you're not giving them that, you're just putting them at exposure for injuries, and that's where it all comes from. So I mean, I wouldn't be opposed. At the end of the day, I wouldn't be opposed to growing the league and making it bigger. But at the same time, there's so much behind that. In order for it to be done, it needs a lot of backing from the FA, which I don't think we have that right now.
Yeah, I'm on an in-between in this, because there's a part of me, I look at the championship and I think, yeah, you could make the WSL like 14 teams probably. But at the same time, like, we've got an issue with supply of players. You know, most teams in the WSL have squads of like 18, 19. You know, even Arsenal don't have like their full allocation of 25. Actually, very few teams do. So it's like, on one hand, it is short. It does seem a bit repetitive, particularly, you know, Arsenal are playing Chelsea in the FA Cup and Chelsea in the Conti Cup, and they played Manchester City in the Conti. Like, you do get a lot of repeat fixtures, and there is that question about the Conti Cup. But at the same time, I think there is a player welfare question, particularly because they're expanding the international calendar, it seems, without really thinking about this kind of stuff and the pool of players to actually support it. I'm not sure that's there yet. I'm not sure that, like, could a Leicester take another four games a season, for example, with the size of squad they've got? Not really sure at the moment. So I don't think we're quite there yet, but I do think it's coming. A more specific Arsenal question now, Pippa. Now, obviously, in January, Arsenal really, really tried to get a striker. Jonas Eidevall was very, very much on record up front about the need for a striker. They didn't get one. But everything that emerged on kind of transfer deadline day in January about the bid for Alessia Russo. But a story that came out about that day was that Stina Blackstenius was potentially offered as a makeweight in the deal, in a potential deal for Russo. You know, Jonas Eidevall's denied that. At the same time, I don't really question the journalists who had that story in Anton and Molly. So, you know, there's a potential question about Stina Blackstenius's morale at the moment. And Amy77 on our Discord simply asks, do you see a future for Stina at the club beyond this season?
Wow, just for the record, I had no idea about that situation offering Blackstenius, because even that whole Russo saga took me by surprise. I mean, it would have been nice. But if that is true, that is not the type of thing you want to say about, one of your new signings. She's only been at Arsenal for 3 months. And two, she is our other striker whilst our two key players are out injured. So that's not what you want to hear from your new manager and your new club whilst you're settling into London life. So after hearing that, no, I'm not quite sure. I mean, but every time I see Stina, she looks happy. She looks like she's enjoying her football. Granted, of course, she could score more goals. I mean, any striker would want to score more goals. But no, if that is true, I see Stina as a short-term plan for Arsenal women now.
Yeah. I think the problem for Stina as well is that her role has largely been about making space for other attackers, but those other attackers are currently injured. So there's a real, real need, like a lot of the attackers we've got at the moment, there's just more of a need for them to score more goals. And I think that really puts the spotlight on all of them, really. And we've definitely got more questions about that coming down the line. But Alex, if I, again, another relatively simple one, just a one-line question here from Aaron on our Discord. And Aaron asks, is the WSL title completely gone now for Arsenal?
I hate to say it, but I do have low hopes of that. I think this Manchester City game meant more than what it seemed. In the sense of, well, most importantly, confidence. We know that Arsenal kind of thrive on confidence and thrive when we don't have it. And thrive in the wrong way when we don't have it. And I think this match was kind of a mental awareness of how far we are now from A, the title, to even a Champions League spot. We're out of a Champions League spot now. And if we do get it to third place, then we have to go through phases of qualifiers. So it's not even an ideal place for Champions League qualifiers, let alone a title. But the fact that we have one game against all three top teams that we have now not won against this season so far says a lot. We've gotten 1 point, and that was against Chelsea. And that wasn't the greatest game ever. I think we were a bit lucky because we were actually on top most of the match, but I don't know if that would happen again at the end of the season. So the fact that we have one match left against all three top teams, that does not give me a lot of confidence. If we would have played already before and potentially could have gotten, I mean, one of those three teams, if not all, are going to draw points between now and the end of the season. I think that's quite clear. But that means that so are we, essentially. And we have in the last couple match days. So I'm not confident. The way we're going and the way the confidence, and it just maths. Like we've let down a lot of points already, that it's gonna be so hard to come back, and now we're gonna have to rely on other teams to drop points rather than us being able to keep it up. So I'm a bit weary for the title race. Now I'm just gonna focus, make sure we still have Champions League next season.
I'm just gonna say yes, the title is gone. But as a women's football fan, I've been wanting and yearning for the WSL to be more competitive and more teams to be competing for those top spots, but not at the expense of Arsenal sitting fourth. No, that's not what I wanted.
Yeah, I like mathematically, it's not, you know, look, if Arsenal win all their games, they'll win it because, you know, they've got a game in hand. But obviously those games include City at home, Chelsea away, Manchester United away. For me, like as soon as Beth and Viv were injured, psychologically, I wrote the title off because I just don't think anyone wins the league when that happens. I just don't. And I know people don't like hearing it and regard it as an excuse and all of that. But if two Ballon d'Or winners come out of your team for that lot, like it's going to have an impact. And it's not just the quality of those players. Those players have played nearly every game for 5 years. So Arsenal don't know how to play without those players because they haven't had to do it before. So what they're essentially doing is on the fly, trying to learn a new way to play and trying to learn a new way to play without two Ballon d'Or winners. I don't think anyone wins the league when that happens. I think if in November or December, like Chelsea lost Sam Kerr and let's say Lauren James to ACL injuries, they wouldn't win the league either. Like, I just think it's kind of as simple as that. It is annoying though, because I think this is the weakest Chelsea have looked to me for quite some time. I don't think they have a midfield, and I think they were there for the taking and we've not been able to do it. City obviously were handicapped massively by losing their entire midfield at the beginning of the season. United to me look like the ones that can challenge, but they have to have no injuries, I think, to challenge. I think if they get, like Ella Toon being suspended for that Chelsea game, I think that might literally cost them the title. Like, I think it's that fine for Manchester United. So it's annoying because I think the league was there for the taking this year. But I just think when you lose two players like that, like, I'm sorry, it just has a massive, massive impact. And when we talk about those big games, again, annoying. We should have beaten Chelsea, should have beaten Manchester United. Miedema started none of those games. Beth Mead played one of them. We didn't have Kim Little, Hafaeli or Leah Williamson against Manchester United. Like, that is significant. And it does make me worry about the level of some of the games we got left this season as well. So, I mean, it's not gone mathematically. In fact, it's nowhere near gone mathematically, but I don't expect it, put it that way. And, you know, on that note, Pippa, this is another actually a fairly straightforward question from Andrew Gambrill, who is at Andrew Gambrill on Twitter. Who has been the biggest loss for you, Beth Mead or Vivian Miedema? I have a very definite answer to this, but I'm interested in yours.
Well, that's such a tough one because they're two of the best players in the squad and two of my favourite players. But for me, I think I would go with Beth Mead. I just feel like in most recent seasons, especially last season, she's been more influential. Vivian Miedema has missed quite a few games for other reasons and personal reasons, but Beth Mead, every time she plays, she produces something, whether it's assists, whether it's goals, she is in the mix, and she has that physicality about her as well. Sorry, yeah. The whole house is sick, sorry. But yeah, for me, it's Beth Mead. Of course, I would love both of them back in the squad, but what Beth Mead brings to that team, not many other teams in the WSL have that.
What about you, Alex?
I have to agree. I think what Beth gives to the team over Viv, and if you're looking at it also, a domino effect. Without Viv being there, you have Frida Manum stepping into the midfield, so it's not an entire loss in that position, considering how good Frida Manum is right now. But you have Beth and you take her out on the wing and you see the lack of pace, of crosses, of assists, the energy. You see the lack of that so far. With Victoria Pillow, I know we'll probably talk about Victoria Pillow, but you see it come back a bit more. But you're talking about a player that just came in. Again, Beth played almost every single match over the last 5 years. Victoria Pillow is not going to step in and feel the same comfort that Beth does on the pitch. But I think what Beth left behind when you look at what we're struggling with precisely is scoring goals. And I think Beth was at the forefront of that. And I think, yeah, that's a way bigger gap than what Viv left behind.
Yeah, I completely agree with both of you. If you were to ask me who do I think is the better player, there's not much in it, but I'd say Viv, just because I think she's overall, you know, probably the best player in the world in terms of talent. But yeah, I completely agree, and particularly with what you said, Alex. Like, I think Frieda coming in for Viv makes that less of a blow, whereas for Beth, it's not even like the quality of the replacements per se. It's just they're so different. Like, Frieda for Viv is like a fairly good analog, and Frieda scores a lot of goals as well for a number 10. But it's, yeah, the lack of Beth is around, and you can see we're trying different things. Like, sometimes Lena Hurtig plays there, sometimes Caitlin Ford, sometimes Katie McKett. Like, we haven't found it yet in terms of who starts really on that right hand side, and whoever it is completely different to Beth. So it's not even really like a quality thing. It's just the balance of the team thing, and I completely agree. I think she's the bigger loss at the moment. And I'll throw this one to you, Alex, since you referenced it about Victoria Pullover, and this is from Eileen, who is at Eileen EST on Twitter. In which roles do you see our new signings featuring for the rest of the season, and what is reasonable to expect from them? So that's Catherine Cool and Victoria Pullover, and I guess Sabrina D'Angelo as well, although we've got a question about her specifically. So maybe let's go with Victoria and Catherine.
Yeah, I mean, look, Victoria Pullover has been one of my favorite players for a couple of years now. She's been one to watch for a long while now, and it was only a matter of time when she stepped out of the Netherlands to play club football. But you saw her in the Euros this summer. I think that's where people really caught the eye. She came on as a sub every single match. She made an impact. And it was, again, with the lack of a Liga Martins, for example. You have Liga Martins coming off, you have Victoria Pullover coming in with a fresh new face, with the energy. And, you know, it's an environment that she's obviously more comfortable with than Arsenal. And I think she might provide something similar when we're talking about Beth's replacement. I think she's a good one. I mean, you saw her against Man City. She's able to hold the ball up. I think against Man City, what the problem was that she had no overlapping runs. She did everything right. She received the ball, held the ball up, footwork, got into space, but there was no one to release the ball into. And that's where you didn't really see the best of her, because I think that would have been very, very key if Arsenal would have been able to capitalize on that. But you see her, she's good physically, she's good technically, she's intelligent. She is a very Dutch player in the bestest of sense. When you look at Miedema and all the qualities that Miedema has, Victoria Pullover is very similar in terms of quality, but very, 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 very different style of play. And then you look at Katarina Kuhl. I mean, you saw her in the midfield again. Her touches, her vision, her intelligence, it's all there. She's very young, and you kind of forget about that when you look at her play. Because you look at her alongside Kim Little, and she looked outstanding. I think now what she's lacking is, apart from the obvious everyday answer, an experience when you're talking about young player, I think now it's about learning how to play off of each other. When you look at how she played against Kim Little, they still didn't really understand what they wanted, what each of them wanted. But when you look at the energy that Katarina and Victoria Pullover bring into the team, I think it sparks something new. And once they're able to get into that comfort zone, I think that's going to make all the big difference. But do we have time for them to settle into their comfort zone by the end of the season? That's going to be a big no. So that's a project for next season, unfortunately. But I think the potential is all there. And I think for this season, you're expecting individual creativity and individual spark, not necessarily a team spark just yet. So I would say not to expect for them to be, you know, the perfect team player by the end of the season, but do expect them, because they are both individually brilliant, expect them to actually make a difference, but not, you know, 10 goals by the end of the season, so to say. You're going to see them sparking, you're going to be able to see that potential going into next season, but look, they're both young. Jonas can mold them into basically whatever he wants. And with the players around them, I think it's going to be really, really good. But yeah, I would say expect less, but still expect more individually, because they're amazing players.
Yeah, I think there's a short-term and a long-term question here, because the thing is that they're a 10 and an 8. And actually, that's one area where Arsenal don't have injuries. So I don't really expect to see Pelova start over Marnum, for example. I don't really expect Katarina Kuhl to start over Kim Little, not at this stage. So I think really Katarina Kuhl, I think, like, basically I see them as direct replacements for Jordan Nobbs and Manu Iwabuchi, who were both like bench players, but I think they're like bench slash rotation players that the manager actually likes and trusts, which was not the case with Jordan and Mana. So I think they'll be like Jordan and Mana plus. I do think we have seen Victoria Pelova in that wide position a couple of times now in the last couple of games. I do think we'll see that. And like, essentially what we've just been talking about is Arsenal haven't found out what they're going to do on the flanks yet. They've been trying many different things, and Pelova might end up being the short-term answer there. Like, he's going to have to settle on something at some stage. I wouldn't mind betting that it might be Pelova, just to give, like, just to have a bit more of a playmaker in that front line. But like Katarina Kuhl, I think don't expect too much this season. You know, expect her to come on in games and finish games, but not much more than that. I think long term, they're probably looking at her taking some of the burden off Kim. But yeah, Pelova's the most interesting one. Sorry, Alex, you want to come back in on that?
Yeah, it was going off of what you said in terms of how she's naturally a midfielder. I think if Jonas continues up with this awful three in the back formation, what happens is, yeah, so Victoria Pelova holds the ball up and then she cuts inside and runs into the space that she usually would if she was a number 10. So I think it suits her in that position of being out wide, holding the ball up, and either able to play into the ball and run into the space as a 10, or hold the ball up, do something good, and run into the space and drag the defenders along with her to create more space for everyone else, in which case would create space for Sina Baksinius or our actual number 10, for example. But I think there was just not enough support around her to be able to play that way. And it was all there against City. She was bringing up the fullback. But our makeshift wing backs were not making the overlapping runs, so that was all going to waste. But I think it actually, if we continue with the back three, I think that position could be hers and she can make it really, really well. It's just a matter of all around her. But I think it, yeah, going into that space that she usually would as a 10, she's obviously really good at. So I think it could do well for Arsenal. But again, it depends on external factors.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the reason he did it as well. Like you say, if you've got wing backs, you've got those wide players, and she was much more of an inside forward rather than like a winger. Whereas if you go to a four, then you're more of a wide player. And again, this is all just a symptom of the fact that we're looking for solutions for playing without Beth Mead in particular. I don't know how that's going to turn out, but I think we're just going to keep trying things until something sticks. Pippa, if I turn this one over to you, it's from Jana at @YanaDW_. What do you now think the club would consider a success for this season? At the start of the season, I'd have said a trophy, Champions League quarterfinal and top two finish, but I don't think that's realistic anymore given the circumstances. There's a second part of her question about Claire Wheatley, but we've got loads of questions about that, so I'll put that on hold. So what do you think is a realistic expectation now for Arsenal for the remainder of this season?
Oh, Jana, you sound like you've lost all hope. Well, obviously now I think a successful season would be getting a Champions League spot. I know they said that it's not realistic, but as we know, it's still a possibility. We're just going to have to win all our games, which is not going to be easy with the remaining fixtures we have. But for me, it's also winning something. The Conte Cup, I know we play Chelsea every single time, and I don't remember the last time we actually beat them. But if we can get that one over the line, that would be a successful season. I mean, I know it sounds bad, but I was gutted when we got Chelsea in the final. I was like, again, give me something different, please. But yeah, hopefully we can get the win this time.
Yeah, I actually don't think that sounds unrealistic. Like, we're in the quarterfinal of the Champions League against Bayern. I think that'll be very close. Don't know, I think that's a coin flip which way that goes. We're in a final in terms of the Conte Cup. I still think second is perfectly realistic. I don't think Manchester City look amazing. Like I said, I think Manchester United, I think it's fragile for them. I think they could really challenge, but it really depends on fitness of key players. I don't think they've got a squad depth there. to really sustain, and they don't rotate a lot. So I'll be interested to see how they end the season. But I think like semi-final, win a cup, finish second. Like,
wait, semi-final, win the Champions League?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like, you know, like Bayern, like I said, Bayern's a coin flip tie. I'm not yeah, really furious if we don't win it, but I think we can. So, like, yeah, we're already in the quarterfinal. We're already in a cup final. I've always felt this season, even before all the injuries and everything, which probably adjusted expectations. And I don't usually like being definite like this because seasons are weird and weird stuff can happen. But I always felt we have to win a trophy this year. Like, I really don't think it can go on not winning the league. I thought we were quite good last year. I was reasonably happy with last season. But, like, because you can be crap and win a cup, or you can be brilliant and not win a cup. Like, cup competitions are cup competitions. But I've always felt we need a trophy this season. And like, I have got my eye on that Conti Cup final. I know it's not the most prestigious of the trophies we're going for, but I just feel like we've really got to get something over the line in terms of building the belief of the team and the fan base. And these questions are always a great gauge for like how the fan base is feeling. And I really, really think that that would like really, really kind of build some belief throughout the club. So,
Tim. I noticed that you didn't mention anything about the FA Cup. Is that because we've got to play Chelsea in that as well?
Yeah, I mean, look, win one of the domestic cups. It's just we're in the Conti Cup final. If we got past Chelsea in the FA Cup, like, we'd be favourites, like, surely. You know, I know, like, City and United are still there, but, like, if we get, like, to win any of the domestic cups, we have to beat at least one of those teams. To do the Conti Cup, I know we were given a bye to the quarterfinal, and that's a bit silly, but we'll still have beaten Manchester City and Chelsea to win it, which to me, that kind of makes you deserve winners, because if you're going to win it, you've got to beat at least one of those teams. So yeah, one of the domestic cups, but I mean, I'd love to take the Conti Cup as well, just because that happens a couple of months before the end of the season, and I just think it would like just give some good vibes out of those last few weeks of the season. But speaking of good vibes, let's get into some really heavy stuff now, Alex. We've had loads of questions about... So, obviously, it's two transfer windows in a row now where Jonas has been very upfront about the fact that he didn't get all the players he wanted. He said in the summer he felt that they were one short of what he wanted. He was very, very clear throughout January that he felt Arsenal needed a goal scorer. They tried to get Demir. That didn't happen. They tried to get Chloe Lacasse from Benfica. That didn't happen. They tried to, and then kind of went into panic mode in the last 24 hours, tried to get Alessio Russo, tried to get Signe Brun. And Signe Brun, I think, could have happened if maybe we'd made that move a week earlier. But I mean, from what I'm told, to be fair, I think they had a fair amount of encouragement over Chloe Lacasse and were quite confident of getting that done. And I don't necessarily think it's Arsenal's fault that that wasn't done. But nevertheless, we've had loads and loads of questions about like transfers, et cetera, et cetera. So, let me just read a couple of them. Belinda at Marnamitz Twitter. Do you think Jonas may feel quite let down that Arsenal failed to get a striker in the summer and January and may kickstart a review in recruitment? Ball Ludlow at Dedo Park. Is Claire Wheatley's time up? Will we see significant backroom changes this summer? She's had an extremely unsuccessful tenure within the context of our history, and the last two transfer windows put the spotlight on her. Hernandez at @AluaFemiH_. Is it time for Claire Wheatley to go? Considering all the issues we've faced this season, it's obvious we won't win the league and might have another trophyless season. I think she's responsible for our decline. And yeah, so we had loads of questions about Claire Wheatley, recruitment, et cetera, et cetera. What are your views on that? Do you think it's time that Arsenal maybe made some changes in that kind of back room when it comes to getting deals over the line?
In a short space, I would say yes. When you look at Claire Wheatley, she's been there for a very long time. And in that very long time, I feel like Arsenal have not advanced much. So when you look at it on that perspective, it could be time to start a new cycle, especially with the review that we did last season. You know, you expect a lot of changes to have happened, and that's kind of one that you want when someone's been there for X amount of time. It happens with, I think, any job also. when you've been there X amount of time, if you've not advanced the workplace that you're at, it might be time to go step away from it and just let someone else kind of start that up again. But look, I do have to say that in theory, us signing Stina Baksinius was in theory signing a striker and a goal scorer. Because that didn't work out, that's another story. But essentially, we did get a striker in there at one point. And again, it's sad that it didn't work out because she was supposed to be the goal scorer because Viv had dropped them into the midfield. But the recruitment is a very, I think, touchy subject in Arsenal at the moment, because you look at what Jonas wants, and I don't think he has it entirely clear just yet, considering how he's like the formations and what the style of play, I don't think he has it entirely clear yet. So when you put that together with a very shaky recruitment process, it's just a recipe for disaster. And you're kind of seeing it. You're seeing these really good players come in. You're seeing these okay players come in. You're seeing really good players coming out that another manager would have never done. And you're kind of questioning everything, and it's fair to say, because Jonas, I don't think, has that grip of what he wants to do, what he wants, and it's taking a toll on Arsenal. And I'm not saying it's entirely his fault, but it is kind of like, okay, you know, you've been here X amount of time already. You're kind of expecting to have been advanced a bit further down the line than you have been. And then you have the argument of give him time, let him settle in, let the player settle in, but it's not going anywhere. And we've talked about the WSL, you know, there's no surprise as to what kind of team you're going to be facing. You're going to be facing Chelsea, you're going to be facing Man City, you're going to be facing Man United. There's no surprise to that. Each of them have, especially Chelsea, that's going to be your main focus for the title race. You know how Emma Hayes is going to be. You know what she plays at. There's no surprise. So if you're not able to kind of work towards that, when you literally could not have it more easier than compete for the title for that. And of course, there's many factors for that. I'm just talking very straightforward. If you're not able to do that, when you have your answer very clear, it's quite hard to kind of get behind you in that sense. Get behind you and just get behind the backroom staff. So in short theory, I would say, yes, there needs to be reshuffling. But again, if it's not going to be done right, then there's no point to it either. So it just depends where Arsenal stand at that point.
Hi, I'm Leah Williamson, and you're listening to the Arsenal Women Arscast on Arsenal. Yeah. You've been in my head. I'm normally a one-take wonder. Hi, I'm Leah Williamson, and you're listening to the Arsenal Women Arscast on arsblog.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah. I mean, Jonas has said himself, like, they need to review the way they think they do things on recruitment. And, you know, like, review can be quite a loaded word. Does that mean that, like, so the way the structure works at Arsenal, Claire Wheatley reports into Richard Garlick, who then reports into Vinay. So Richard Garlick's the one who has, like, executive oversight of the women's side. And he'll do, like, performance evaluations of Claire Wheatley and the manager, et cetera, et cetera. So, does review mean, like, you know, getting the suits in, getting the consultants in, or does it just mean sitting down and having a chat and saying, how do we do this better? I think Jonas probably meant the latter there more. I don't know enough about what's going on behind the scenes to sit here and tell you, yeah, it's Claire Wheatley's fault that we're not getting deals over the line. I don't really know. All I know is that we're not getting deals over the line. I don't know exactly where the fault lines are, but that is an issue. There doesn't seem to be an issue in terms of the level of backing the club is willing to give. I guess the thing I'm concerned about is the sense of panic, really. So, for example, Arsenal really wanted JC, the Brazilian winger who ended up going to Barcelona in the summer, and they didn't get her and they went to Lena Hurtig. It's a completely different player. And then, like, the strikers, I have a little bit more sympathy on the striker search. I do think Debien and Chloe Lacasse are fairly similar. I do understand why he'd want Russo. I think Russo is a bit like Blackstenius. I do think she'd fit in. And then Signe Brunn was, that was a bit of a grab. But I guess it's sometimes the targets don't particularly match up, if that makes sense. Like going from Jacy to Lena Hurtig, and I'm not clear on whether that's Jonas or whether that's like that there's a sense of panic, that there isn't like a proper strategy, proper talent ID. But then, like, there have been some really good signings, like Laura Wienreuter, like, what a signing that's been. Hafaeli, like, brilliant, brilliant kind of talent ID. And it's hard in the women's game because there aren't the kind of the vast scouting networks. Clubs really don't share a lot of information, so it's actually quite difficult to work out who's available and who isn't, because there isn't that sense yet. In the men's game, there's lots of data sharing and stuff like that. There isn't in the women's game. So when you're going into the transfer market, you're going a bit blind. Like even Moneybags Chelsea, what have they tried to do to fix their midfield? Like, they tried to buy Grace Guerrero. Well, they're not going to get her. They tried to buy Katie McCabe. They're not going to get her. Like, I don't necessarily think that's just an Arsenal problem, but I think definitely, definitely, definitely there is an issue with recruitment. I don't know where the fault lines are, but something has to change there, I think. I don't know what the answer is, whether that's replacing staff, bringing in other staff. I'm not sure, but it's definitely a problem by the manager's own admission. And I think I'd like to see some sense that the recruitment is a bit more strategized, to be honest. But yeah, we'll see there. Okay, let's go on to, I mean, obviously there's loads of questions about the attack, which I think makes a lot of sense because that does seem to be an issue at the moment. So KP, who is at KPunge15, it feels like we've become a team in transition since January. How long do you think it will take our attacking third to click? And then on this subject, at Beltran's Old Mole asks, what is your preferred front three? For me, Hurtig and Ford are too similar, though I prefer Caitlin, and we need more of a traditional wide forward for Jonas's style. So there's some questions about our attack there. Pippa, if I throw that over to you first, like, let me ask it a bit more plainly. Do you have any sense that this is going to work before the end of the season, or do you think it's kind of going to carry on as it has been and we're just going to keep like looking for solutions?
I don't want to be the negative Nancy, but I think one of the questions was how long will it take to click. I think, well, how long is a piece of string? We have no idea. And for me, any front three that has Caitlin Ford in it Caitlin Ford is the only one for me that shows some attacking prowess. That's the only, I know it sounds harsh, but for me, Caitlin Ford is the only one that seems like an all-round player, that she can attack the front lines, score goals, get assists, and just seems more dominant in that area in the final third. But honestly, I have no idea how long it's going to take to figure out and get and find a solution for our lack of goals scored, because it does feel like that at the moment. But if I'm honest, I think it will solve itself when Beth and Viv are back. that's the plain answer. And when they're back to full fitness and when they're back to their normal selves.
Yeah, yeah. I think, Alex, if we take the second question there from Beltran's Old Mole, who's your preferred front three of our options? This, to me, is the kind of meat of the question, because, again, I don't necessarily think it's all about, like, the quality. I think the chemistry is really difficult to get right with our available attacking options. So if you were picking a front three for, say, the Conti Cup final, it's happening tomorrow, who would you pick?
I was very deep in thought as Pippa was answering the question. I'm gonna stick with the back three that Jonas is trying to imply. And I'm gonna go, and we're including the wing backs into this attacking sense. On the left side, I would leave Steph Catley and Katie McCabe on one side. On the other side, I would have... Oh, this is a hard one. I didn't think this through entirely. I think on the other side, I would have Noelle Maddits and Victoria Pullova and have Caitlin Ford down the middle.
Okay.
I think that would be... I think I'm going to stick with that one. I think Victoria Pullova and Caitlin Ford can work really well together because Caitlin Ford is really good off a good playmaker. So I would like to see that. And with Steph Catley, I mean, she's the overlapping queen, so I think that's quite obvious. And with Katie McCabe, I think they work actually really well together when they play on the same side. And Noelle Maddits would provide a bit more overlapping than Wijnworth Ear, for example. I think that would be it would be Victoria Pullova, Caitlin, and KE as the front three, essentially.
There, Pippa, you wanted to come in on that.
Oh no, it's only when you mentioned that on the right side, thinking, how come you didn't pick Laura?
Do you want to take that? Why Noelle over Laura?
I think Laura is the better defender. That's not a word.
It is now.
I just made it a word. She's a better defender, I think, but against City, she didn't really understand the assignment and the overlapping. And I just think it's just not part of her game naturally. And I think it cost us the attack. Again, Victoria Pullova, she was holding up the ball really well and had nowhere to go because Laura was kind of holding back instead of running forward where the entire space could have been. We could have broken through at least three lines if Laura would have done that. And she barely did that. And I think Noelle Maddits understands the assignment a bit more when it comes to overlapping and going into space. I think Noelle has the pace to do it over Laura as well when it comes to that. So when you just look at the style of play that Arsenal are essentially attempting to play with the back three, I think Noelle fits into it a lot more because Laura kind of just did not do that against City, and that's entirely where I think it broke down, essentially.
Fair. I think at the moment, and again, this is really hard, just because I don't think there is like a brilliant mix between any of the attacking players we've got. But at the moment, I would probably go Katie McCabe on the left. I'd go Caitlin Ford on the right, and then Stina up front. But I'd very much view the subs as a big part of this. So Gio, we got a question about her later, actually. I think very good impact sub material, not least because Arsenal fans will see it when she plays a bit more. She is lightning quick. She is so quick. And actually, it's such a shame that I don't think she's quite ready to like start every game. She's the most Beth-like player we have. In terms of like pressing and nicking the ball, she's really, really strong at that. I'm not quite sure she's ready to start every game at the moment, but I'd see her as a very good impact sub. And Pullova, I mean, I need to see more of Pullova out wide because it does strike me that would give us a better balance in terms of I don't think we have a lot of create. Like, I look at our front four, you include Frieda in that, and I like say, you know, recently we've had like Lena Hurtig on the right, Caitlin Ford on the left, Stina up front, Frieda behind. To me, that's like powerful. That's big. But there's not a lot of like craft in there. There isn't like a creator there. So for me, that's the question. How do we get that kind of that other more creative player? I think Katie McCabe's just the one I've seen the most of. So I'd go with her at the moment. But I do think there's potential there for Victoria Pullova and definitely Gio to finish games from the bench. And I think the reality is we're going to be grappling with this for another couple of weeks and hopefully something comes off. Let's go with this question from Caroline, who is at @iron_line81. Well, actually, to be fair, we've kind of addressed this. There was a question about what our young signings can do for the rest of the season. I think we've kind of done that one. But all right, let's go with this one since I was just talking about her. Jeremy Bradley at Jeremy Bradley 49, and I'll throw this one to Alex. How much of an influence do you see Gio being for the rest of the season? She seems to have so much potential.
Yeah, I think for the rest of the season, probably not much. I think it's one of those with the short-term, long-term perspectives on it. Gio is a very young player who's been playing professionally for a very long time. And you kind of forget how young she is because she's been in the professional game for so long, obviously with Barcelona. In the Spanish league, she's played professionally since a very young age. And you forget she's young and she still has a lot to mature about. And unfortunately, for the last couple of seasons, it's been kind of inconsistent in the playing time that she's been able to get. So, look, she's been playing professionally for a long time because she is that good. She is a really good player, but I think for her, both personally and professionally, she just needs to settle down somewhere for once and for all. I'm not saying forever, but she needs to settle down and feel the environment and feel comfortable in the environment, and then you will see the best of her. So that's not going to happen within the next few months. You're not going to see that impact. You're going to see, again, those individual sparks of what to expect from her come next season when she is more settled into the team. But from now to the end of the season, you're going to kind of see a patch of what to expect in her and what she can do for the team. She's going to do her best, and her best, again, the standard of our new younger signings, we're counting Gio into this, is quite high. And you're going to see some really good, really, 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 really good stuff. Is it going to be what you expect or what you want from a signing instantly? No. But I think Gio is a good long-term project. And again, she is an amazing player. But I think it is now about getting her settled in. And it looks like it's going in the right direction. You know, with Rafaela there, that's a bit home. You know, she's getting on with the other young players, with Katrina, for example. So I think it's the process is already starting. And I think if we see Gio at her best, I think it will be what Arsenal need, essentially, in that front line.
Yeah. It's like the other signing, but more so because she's even younger. Well, she's 19. So it's one of those. I really want to shout about this signing because I've seen a lot of Gio over the years playing for Brazil, and she's a mega talent. But I don't want to shout about it too much, particularly with our attack as it is at the moment, because she's not going to rescue our attack. That would be a completely unfair expectation. What we do have is a mega talented player. I think you're exactly right with what you say in terms of her settling in, needing to feel at home, because she was at Barca. Was she at Atleti before that? And she spent time on loan at Levante. She's had a loan spell at Everton. In the men's game, I see this with Brazilian players and South American players all the time. They're fairly nomadic. And Gio, like, moved to the US when she was a teenager. So, like, the last 5 years for her have been, like, moving around a lot. And I think you're exactly right. She needs to settle somewhere. And as much as the Everton loan was a bit of a bust for her, I think in the long term, having this couple of months at Arsenal leading into next season will be really valuable for her. I really think it will. And I think that might even be better than her being at Everton, which, frankly, were it not for the injuries, she would have stayed there, or she would have gone somewhere else on loan. She wouldn't be here. But I think it will be useful for the long term to have her here. Like you say, she's living with Catherine Kuhl at the moment. She seems to be getting on with members of the team. And that's what the next few months is about. And I wouldn't expect to see much more than, like, an impact player from the bench for the rest of the season. But we've got a mega talent on our hands. And it's another thing, right, where three really, really strong young players have come into the team in January. But I don't think any of them are going to rescue our season right away. They're long-term signings. And that's, you know, that's both good and frustrating at the same time. But one signing that we did make, let's see if I can find the question because I seem to have lost it. Is Sabrina D'Angelo, a Canadian 29-year-old goalkeeper, which is not one for the future, and actually a really interesting signing, because if you sign 29-year-old goalkeepers who are competing for the number one jersey for someone like Canada, that they've not come to be your backup goalkeeper, essentially. And we know that Manu's contract is up at the end of the season. So I'm going to ask you both this question. Forgive me, I seem to have lost it. Someone did ask it, but I remember the question anyway. But it's basically, And I'll go to you first, Pippa. Do you think, like, Sabrina D'Angelo has played two games in the Conti Cup, been really, really strong in both, kept two clean sheets. Would you start her over Manu Zinsberger at the moment?
I mean, she was incredible, especially in that Man City game. She made some really, really good saves. But for me, it's too soon for me to say anyone should take anyone's position yet. I've only seen her play twice in cup competitions, but she looks good. That is the thing. She does look good. But I'm concerned. I mean, Manu has been with us quite a couple of seasons now. I know her contract's running out soon, but I didn't expect her to... I just felt like she'd be with Arsenal for a very long time. I don't know why. I feel like she's part of the furniture now. One of our players, and she's been with us for a transition period. And but as you say, Sabrina is not the youngest goalkeeper. She's competed for a number one spot for Canada. But I like Sabrina D'Angelo. I mean, she's already got a chant. If that doesn't tell you something, fans love her already. They were singing her name throughout the whole game, and I love that. But it's too soon for me to say whether she'll take Manu's spot. I mean, if she does, I wouldn't be mad about it because she looks a very good goalkeeper. But I think it's unfair for her to come in and take the spot straight away.
Yeah, yeah. And the question, I remember as well, the question kind of had at the end of it, it looks like Manu's going to go at the end of the season and that Sabrina D'Angelo would probably be the number one at that point anyway. So do we just, I think they phrased the question, do we just rip the plaster now? What do you reckon, Alex?
It's a hard one. I think Manu's going to be very hard to replace in terms of, yeah, you know, she's fitting with this Arsenal squad really, really well. And especially because over the last two seasons, she's become the keeper that we've always wanted her to be, essentially. And she's at the top of her game right now. So to lose her, I think, would be quite... It would suck, basically, to put it in a very nice way. And you're kind of starting with a new keeper that hasn't necessarily settled in. And I think... what makes it worse now is that Manu was here from before. She settled in with Aaliyah Williamson, with Alata, with the KE, with the Steph. You know, she knows how to play with them. And you're bringing in a new keeper that's coming under Jonas, who does not know the same, that he does not know what he wants to do yet. You know, those weird goal kicks with Rafaela and the keeper, I still don't understand. So you're bringing in, my concern is you're bringing in a new keeper, different style of play than Manu, into a team that is chaotic, essentially. And I don't know how that's necessarily going to work out. But in terms of shot stopping, I think she was quite good against Man City. Again, we haven't seen her that much in an Arsenal setting, for example. Because again, you know, a Canada style play is completely different. She played in Sweden before. She played in the NWSL before. Completely different style play than an Arsenal. And again, Manu had the Joe Montemurro foundation of being comfortable playing with your feet, essentially, which you essentially need when you have the back line that we do, that bring in a lot of pressure, and you want that outlet for your keeper. So I don't know how she's going to be, essentially. But again, I don't think it's entirely down to her. I think it's just entirely down to Jonas needs to kind of get it together, have a clear game plan for her to let her grow into. I think that would be my biggest concern. But I think, you know, I haven't seen her that much either, but she looks solid, and it's what we need. Mm. And I don't think replacing Manu is going to be quite hard, especially because there's not a lot of keepers out there to the same standard. And the ones that are to the same standard already are with a very big team.
Yeah.
So it's a hard one.
Yeah, I find this really fascinating, this signing. I think this is our most interesting signing of January. I mean, I think we've all making the assumption, I think a fairly well-placed assumption, that Manu probably is going to go. She does have an option of another year on her contract, but she gave an interview in the Austrian press where she sounded a little bit non-committal on that. And I believe her fiance is in Germany and things like that. So, you know, I don't know enough about that really to comment on it. I'm with Pippa on this in terms of, I'm wary of new toy syndrome when you get a new signing and it's like they play two games and they play quite well and you're like, well, they're brilliant. And you know, I think Manu has developed in a way that I didn't expect. I have to be honest. When we first signed her, I looked at Manu and I was like, I see a footballer, but I'm not sure I see a goalkeeper. I don't think that anymore. I think she's developed so much. But what really, really caught my ear was, we did a podcast with Amanda Zaza about Sabrina, and I asked just as a general question, open question. I said, what do you think Sabrina's biggest qualities are? And she said, oh, she plucks the ball out of the air and she distributes quickly and she's got good long distribution. And I was like, those are all the things, those are probably the three things Manu doesn't have. Like in terms of distribution, completely different, like long distribution. I have to be honest, when I was looking at the Man City game with Arsenal, like playing themselves into trouble all the time, there was a big part of me that was thinking, I wish like Sabrina was just there to boot the ball over the top of this City press. So what's really interesting is she seems completely different. And one of the first questions I ever asked Jonas was about his philosophy with goalkeepers, because Joe used to rotate them and he said, no, I don't like that. I like having a clear number one. But now that seems to be less the case. But I do think Sabrina will be number one. I'm kind of with Pippa. I think two games is too soon. And particularly when you've got a senior player like Manu. I think it would be, and she hasn't really done anything to get dropped, you know. I think that would be, and sometimes you have to consider what impact that would have on like the whole team as well. And I think you also make a very good point, Alex, that there's already a lot of change in this team and we're already kind of looking at it and going, God, who do we play in these positions? And perhaps adding to that at the moment, not optimal. I'm happy to give Sabrina the cup games. She might not be, I don't know if she'll be registered for the Champions League anyway, because you're only allowed to register three new players in January. And obviously Arsenal brought four in. So one of them's going to have to sit out. And it might be Sabrina just because there are two other goalkeepers there. So I think this is another, even though she's 29, I think that's another kind of next season signing. I think we've made quite a lot of those in January. Let's have this, because we haven't really talked so much about the departures of Jordan Nobbs and Manu Iwabuchi having gone to Aston Villa and Spurs. And question here from Lauren Dempsey at Lauren D 2710, and I'll throw this to you, Pippa. Is Jonas at fault for not getting the best out of some players? Having seen Manner and Jordan getting goals and assists at their new clubs, I think it raises a lot of questions.
Honestly, my first thought was, what was the issue? What was the problem? Why were they not getting the minutes? Because I went to watch Manner play, actually. I know it's so strange seeing her in a Tottenham kit, but just watching her on the ball and off the ball, I just felt like, why couldn't Jonas get the best out of her? And then Jordan Nobbs the other day gets a hat trick. I mean, it is questionable. Is it a non-footballing issue that they wasn't getting played? Or because it doesn't make sense to me now, because obviously when we don't know what happens behind the scenes, and we sit and we ponder and think, why are they not playing? Yes, we know Jordan had injuries and so forth, but she's back, she's fit, surely she can get some game time. And even when she did get game time with us, she scored a wicked goal in the Champions League. She's done amazing, but she wasn't getting enough game time. And now we're seeing her flourish at Aston Villa. Man is doing great at Spurs, and it is worrying. Is it down to his management style? Honestly, I'm asking questions because I don't have the answers, because I'm just as confused as who asked the question. I'm just as confused as
Lauren. Yeah.
I'm just as confused as you are, because I would understand if, let's say, they went on these loans or they left and they played poorly and they couldn't get into the game, then I'd say I understand why Jonas didn't play them. But it's the complete opposite. They're doing exactly what they expect us to do as professional players, and they're playing well. So it's a strange one.
Yeah, I feel differently about the two players. So the thing is, it's a crowded area of the team, and it's clear. I think there are issues probably on the physical. Like, I don't think it's a massive coincidence that two of Arsenal's smallest players physically left the team in January. I think Jonas wants a lot more physically. Jordan, I mean, look, Jordan's issue will always be that she plays the same position as Kim Little. And like, Jonas didn't really seem to want her as a 10. And at this stage of her career, you know, I think there is logic in a 19-year-old in Katrin Kuhl having that spot in the squad rather than 30-year-old Jordan Nobbs, who's trying to get in the World Cup squad. Manner, I just don't think it worked at Arsenal for Manner. I do think that was a physical thing as well. I thought the first few months under Jonas, she looked okay. But since like last January, I just, I know she didn't have a lot of chances, but I just, unfortunately with Manna, that was a Joe signing and she never got to play under Joe. I kind of think it's that simple. Jordan, I'd love to have kept. I think she could have played more than she did. But even so, I think at this stage of her career, she was never going to want that. And obviously there's a difference in emotional connection between the two players. But I guess in terms of the question, like about Jonas not getting the best out of players, I think maybe there's a question about squad players. I look at like the first 11 and I don't really think any of them are underperforming or anything like that. But then maybe is there an issue with players who play less and how they develop and how they communicate with the coach? But then like I think the fact is over the first 18 months of his reign, those have largely been players he doesn't really want or really weren't his players. I'd be much more interested to see how it works now with like Gio, Kuhl, Pallova, D'Angelo, who are going to be squad players, but they're his squad players. So I think that's when we'll be able to answer that question. And let's take the last one from Clive Bunting, at Clive Bunting. I mean, he's phrased this question in terms of your favourite Arsenal women's song at the moment. I think we dealt with that one on a previous podcast, and it's always difficult to think of these things off the top of your head. But Clive just references to how the fans have really stepped up their efforts to support the team this season. And so I'll just ask a general question, I think, both of you. Like, how... Again, I don't want to load the question because I'm delighted about it, right? I think it's so, so great to finally go to Meadow Park and hear chanting and see people together in the North Bank and people that know each other meeting up before games in pubs and making up songs and stuff like that. I think we've missed this for so, so long. And I personally, I just think it's been great to see. But if I go with you first, Alex, just, and I know you were at the Conti Cup game as well, like, did you ever see a scenario where a Wednesday night Conti Cup game would look and sound like that at Meadow Park?
Yeah, no, it was brilliant. And they made the announcement of the attendance and I was quite shocked because it sounded like double the amount of people that was there. I think they did well to kind of crowd everyone in the same space as well. But it sounded literally like it just didn't sound like the attendance that was there, which was quite nice. And you're obviously seeing against, you know, the Manchester United game that had a good attendance as well. The Chelsea game had a good attendance, but it was quite quiet. I was actually quite disappointed in the atmosphere of that one.
Yep.
It was very dead. But I think for me, I think the biggest thing now is Champions League. Because it is, it does disappoint me when you see the rest of the crowds in all the other matches. When you look at, not even, you know, Barcelona is going to be Barcelona. That's always going to be there. But PSG, Bayern Munich, you know, our away game in Munich is going to be a good one. And, you know, Bayern Munich do bring in a lot of support. Wolfsburg, even, you have all these teams that bring in a lot of support for Champions League. And you have us that don't do anything for Champions League. And it looks quite sad, if I'm being very blunt. Mm. It is very disappointing because you have 30 plus thousand for WSL games. And that's only seen in England, essentially. And then you have a European competition where essentially that's a global competition that's being seen. And you have all these other big stadiums being filled with fans and support. And then you have Arsenal with less than 5,000 fans in a big stadium. And it is quite sad and is quite disappointing. So apart from everything, you know, match days, you know, Bournemouth is getting filled up and it's what you want to see. But essentially, in Champions League games, I think it's very disappointing.
Yeah, I think you hit upon a really interesting point there, and one that I think, you know, the various kind of groups that have sprung up, like Red and White and AWFC Home and Away, who've done just such a good job of galvanizing and getting people together and really working on that social side of going to games, because that's what creates atmosphere. And I think you've hit on something really interesting there, which is how do we transplant that couple of hundred people in the North Bank who are singing and, you know, making the atmosphere at Meadow Park so good, how do you then transplant that into the Emirates? And I know that's something that these groups are working on with the club. Like, can we get them sitting together? Where do we get them sitting together in the stadium? And it's difficult in the Emirates because they sell block by block around the sides, when ideally you want that really behind the goal. And, you know, there's lots and lots of, you know, how do we like transplant the atmosphere that's been created, I think, very recently at Meadow Park to the Emirates. But I mean, Pippa, like not just the Man City game, you know, the West Ham away game, which I know wasn't a fantastic game or result for us. But for me, just seeing behind that goal, like an away end and it being full of Arsenal fans. And I know that caught West Ham off guard, by the way, because they announced the game as a sellout. It was not a sellout. And I think what happened was Arsenal sold a load of tickets and they were like, uh-oh, we haven't employed enough staff to deal with a sellout here. But, you know, seeing like full away ends and, you know, just particularly in the North Bank and the East Stand, there's a real sense of camaraderie building. How have you found it going to Meadow Park in the last few months?
I love it. And just touching on that West Ham game as well, like it was full to the brim. People had flags. Like it was so nice to have an away game where everyone brings their like banners with them. And there was some Swedish flags there and face paints going on. And it was so, so loud. And I loved that. I mean, I was sat all the way on the other end because I couldn't fit into that. I got there quite late, so I couldn't fit into that side. So luckily the steward was nice enough to get me a seat all the way on the other end. But I could hear them. And it was funny because when it looked like we had scored, although we didn't score in goals, that side went absolutely crazy and it was so loud. But yeah, at Meadow Park, the atmosphere, I love that because for so many years, the players and the club have obviously called that their home and they prefer playing there to the Emirates for so many reasons, but now I can see why more, because the atmosphere there, you're not going to replicate that at the Emirates Stadium. It's, you're filling out Meadow Park most games. The crowd is louder than it's ever been before. There's chants going on. I mean, there's always been chants, to be fair, but it would only be a couple of people singing them and it'd always be the same people. You kind of got to know who they were, but now it's everyone getting involved and I absolutely love it. Now it's becoming a fortress and hopefully more teams will be more scared to come there and play.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm not saying this is the reason it's happened or anything, but I also kind of think what a lovely tribute to Maria Petri, for example, to take up that baton and really create that kind of sense of togetherness. And look, it's not our responsibility to make these podcasts positive. Like we don't have to, like the questions are the questions and we'll answer them. But I did want to fit that in to the podcast because I think it's really important what's been happening at Meadow Park over the last few months, and wanted to kind of pay tribute to the people who are making that happen. I know I've had a lot to say in terms of like, I think the big challenge for women's football is to create that fan culture. And I think we're really seeing that at Arsenal now, and it's not easy to do. It's one of those very much easier said than done kind of things. And I love seeing it develop like that. So kudos to everyone involved in that. And that brings us to a close for the February mailbag. We will be back. We'll do some other podcasts ahead of the Conti Cup final. Alex, I wonder if you can guess who I'm going to ask to come on the podcast to try and preview that one on March the 5th. We'll do some and we'll do something ahead of the Bayern Munich game as well. I've got a decent guest in mind to talk a little bit of Bayern before we play them in March. But obviously everything else Arsenal women, come to Ask Blog News, because we've got the lot, podcasts, articles, videos, etc., etc. Alex, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on. Always a pleasure.
Pippa, go back to bed.
Thank you. My pleasure as always.
And we will speak to you very, very soon, and we'll do a March mailbag as well. Until then, take care of yourselves and see you later.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.